What happens when your own internal war mirrors the one raging outside? In 2015, Emma Ayres, a successful Australian radio presenter, drowning in depression and unresolved gender dysphoria, made a decision that seemed almost absurd. She moved to Kabul to teach cello, not despite the danger, but perhaps because of it. Afghanistan had been stripped of its musical soul in 1996, when the Taliban banned all non-religious music, destroyed instruments, and forced musicians underground. Nearly two decades later, the Afghanistan National Institute of Music emerged as an act of cultural rebellion, reserving half its spots for disadvantaged children and, most radically, welcoming girls. What Emma discovered there wasn't just a school, it was a laboratory where music became medicine, where broken instruments mirrored broken lives, and where the simple act of drawing a bow across strings became an assertion of existence itself. Depression colonizes you atom by atom, stealing joy first, then hope, then humor. By the time Emma resigned from her radio career, she'd already disappeared from her own life. Therapy sessions excavated childhood wounds and circled around a truth buried since watching Boys Don't Cry in a Pakistani hotel room. She was transgender. Since age 5, she'd felt confounded by having a girl's body, a dissonance that hummed beneath everything, like a persistent wrong note. When Dr. Ahmad Nasser Sarmast, founder of Anam and suicide bombing survivor, needed a cello teacher, Emma applied. A war zone seemed preferable to the one inside her head. While awaiting confirmation, she walked Nepal's Annapurna circuit to Muktinath Temple, finding acceptance of her wrecked life at 3,800 meters. The job offer arrived like an oxygen mask. Preparing meant an odd wardrobe transformation, growing out her short hair, buying hijabs, discovering that skateboarder clothes scored 10 out of 10 on the Muslim modesty chart. She packed 60 kilos, including her cello, Buddhist texts, and an ultrasound machine for a remote clinic, the baggage of someone preparing for transformation. Kabul sits in a river valley surrounded by the Hindu Kush Mountains, a geographical fortress that has witnessed empires rise and fall. Flying in during spring 2015, Emma felt genuine optimism. Dr. Sarmast had returned from Australia in 2008 with an audacious vision. While Afghanistan's infrastructure was being rebuilt, its soul needed tending. By 2010, he'd established Anam with World Bank funding, creating the country's first co-educational music school where female literacy stood at 14%. The instrument selection ceremony carried profound weight. Students declared their futures. "My name is Fatima, and I want to learn the cello." These weren't casual choices. In Afghanistan, carrying an instrument home could make you a target. All instruments lived in two barred rooms guarded by Coco Abdul, the longtime caretaker under 4 feet tall. When Emma found four small cellos, one damaged and sounding like a tin can, she remembered her own dull first violin lesson and vowed to make this different. Teaching in Kabul meant recalibrating everything. Emma learned essential Dari words, relax, excellent, hand, and avoided negative ones. Her students carried intergenerational stress, living in crowded homes with scarce food and attention. These lessons offered rare individual focus from an adult who truly saw them. By breaking movements into smaller units, within one lesson, all four could bow, sit properly, and pluck rhythms. Afghanistan's cello population had just doubled. Afghanistan's first girls' ensemble began when Bibi Mina and friends requested space away from boys. What started with two violinists and a cellist became a festival of girl power, Afghan style. While playing Laili Jan, Afghanistan's Romeo and Juliet, these young women revealed their struggles. Laila couldn't stand straight because men in her life forbade it. Hafiza, her family's only healthy member, would arrive just to sleep on Emma's floor. Nagin, the increasingly confident conductor, came from a conservative village where her mother opposed her education. Her relationship with pianist Elham caused her removal until Dr. Sarmast's diplomacy allowed her return. These weren't just students. They were freedom fighters with violins instead of guns. Daily life in Kabul followed absurd logic. Electricity vanished without warning. Getting photocopies consumed entire days. No paper, wrong cartridges, no power. Students appeared, then disappeared as the government randomly declared holidays. Nothing ran predictably, explaining why a decade of foreign aid yielded so little. Yet amid chaos, unexpected warmth emerged, like Bibi, their neighbor with a wooden leg splint, who called Jennifer her daughter and Emma her son, unfazed by the hijab. The grade 12 boys represented Afghanistan's musical future, potentially the country's first generation of locally trained teachers. Amruddin stood out with his rockabilly hairdo and rich bass playing. When Emma explained blues music's roots in African-American slavery, his response cut deep. "Teacher, this is Afghanistan." He understood oppression intimately. Bassett, the 16-year-old trumpeter, practiced obsessively despite having no instructor for 2 years. Unlike peers dreaming of escape, he focused on education at prestigious Interlaken Arts Academy. But social media increasingly showed students life beyond Afghanistan's borders. The exodus began subtly. Ramin's empty seat, then his friend's matter-of-fact response. "Gone, teacher. Turkey teacher." Summer heat melted Kabul as Emma's gender dysphoria resurfaced with devastating force. Surrounded by men, she felt like she was banging on a thick window, looking in at the world of maleness, utterly distraught at not being able to get in. She envied Afghan men, their bodies, beards, certainty of place, and began researching female-to-male transition, feeling she was preparing for a desperately dangerous journey that I would never, ever return from, but which I had no choice but to undertake. When teachers Malad and Fayez defected to America, Dr. Sarmast's face showed defeat as the country of his birth took another bite of faith from him. Yet the school thrived, forming a chamber orchestra, performing at embassies, recording for television. Then an 8.1 magnitude earthquake struck the Hindu Kush, killing 400 people, including 12 schoolgirls crushed while escaping. During Eid, Emma escaped to Istanbul and collapsed under crushing depression, spending days watching videos of transgender men, crying endlessly. She shared her truth with Jennifer and Cami, who simply hugged her and called her their brother. When she returned January 1, 2016, a nap saved her life. She skipped a restaurant dinner where a car bomb killed two guards and a 12-year-old boy. As departure neared, Emma traveled to Bamiyan in men's clothes, beginning her transition. Back home, she received her first testosterone injection, feeling reborn. 6 months later, his voice had dropped an octave. Now Eddie, he found profound contentment. The girls' ensemble, renamed Ensemble Zohra, performed at Davos. New teachers arrived, students continued their journeys. Foreigners leaving Afghanistan pack silver aluminum boxes, hoping to return, but knowing they never will. In Emma's box, she left herself. What Eddie gained was immeasurable, not just gender alignment, but understanding that music, like identity, is worth any cost when it allows you to finally exist as yourself. In a country where both music and authentic selfhood were forbidden, a school full of children proved that the most dangerous thing you can do is refuse to be silenced.